Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Megan Cullop, along here with Scott Micklin.
Good morning.
Morning. Wow, that was like...
Well, we didn't see you, so you were just a disembodied voice.
Oh, okay.
At the start of the show. And so now we can see you as well as hear you.
Here I am.
So good morning. It's Thursday.
It's Thursday.
January 21st, 2021.
It is.
And that's got to be some numerological
45.
Thing.
Week what? Numerological thing.
Yeah. A lot of 21s in that sentence.
Talking about the apocalypse?
No.
Okay, good.
No.
It's
week what?
45.
Yes. Yeah. I believe you're right.
Yeah.
About that. We'll check with the calendar queen.
She'll buy in pretty soon. She's pretty good about that.
She will let us know if we're right or wrong. But anyway, thank you everybody for joining us. We are here for the COVID-19 Community Information Program on KSJE. Live streaming, of course, every Thursday at 9 a.m. You can also hear rebroadcast at noon on KNMI Radio 88.9 and on KSJE Radio at 5:06 p.m. So we appreciate that partnership.
You can even listen to us three times if you want.
You could. I bet people do.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe on, well, the dock, you know, they always have a lot. They throw in like a fire hose at you in the best possible way. So
right.
I feel like it warrants a repeat listen.
Definitely. There's a lot of stuff going on. Speaking of which, here are our guests today. Look at that. What a lineup.
How about this? Good lineup.
Wow, right?
All of a sudden it sounds like we're like NFL broadcasters.
Well, you know.
What a great lineup
look
we
at
have
that.
Today.
Yeah.
Bills versus Ravens.
There you go.
Anyway.
Go Bills. Exactly. Dr. Aaron Philpott, friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
From San Juan Regional Medical Center.
Got to get her a t-shirt.
He's going to be joining us. And Jeff Bourgeois, who's not a doctor.
No.
But works with doctors. He is the president and CEO of San Juan Regional Medical Center, will be joining us as well. And Carmen Martinez, who's also not a doctor, but is the director of the Small Business Development Center here at San Juan College, with some great information about new small business programs to help. There's new PPP loans out, and she's going to talk about all that and much, much more coming up on today's show. So that's what's going on.
Yeah, lots of information.
Yeah, exactly. But let's start where we usually do, with talking about testing and things along that line. And the latest testing information is tomorrow at McGee Park from 9 until 10:30. They have kind of moved testing out to McGee Park, as we mentioned. This is the latest information that we have. I think the testing days have gone to maybe 3 days a week.
Yeah.
I think last week was 2 days a week.
Yeah.
But we'll share that on our Facebook page and our Twitter pages as we get next week's testing information. Hasn't come out yet, so we're waiting and watching. Of course, the other test, the saliva-based rapid testing, is still happening in Kirtland. 10 to 3 every day, as far as we know.
Yep.
Judy Nelson Elementary School, that's on Road 6580 in Kirtland. And so just a reminder that that is still available, still an option for folks who want to get tested. And so we encourage folks to check that out, too, if they want to get tested.
Yeah.
So, and that's a rapid test, so that would tell me that the results are more rapid.
Yep.
Rapido.
Bueno. Yes. Yeah.
Gracias.
I think within 48 hours, actually. But that's the one that you swab the inside of your own cheek, so
right.
It's a little less invasive,
right?
Yeah.
So I think people like that.
Yep.
So there's that option as well, everybody. The vaccines are still rolling out across our state, and so we are now in phase 1B. As we talked about last week on the show, if you remember, we had our guest from the Department of Health, but we just wanted to remind everybody of that phase. We're still in 1B, and the state, again, suggests if you do want to be vaccinated against COVID-19 that you register at vaccinenm.org. That gets you kind of in the state database, lets you input different health conditions that you may be suffering from or things like that. So as they kind of determine who's eligible to get the vaccine during these different phases, that may get you on the list a little sooner if you want the vaccine sooner than later. And then they will contact you with an appointment, and you can make an appointment. We now, I believe we heard this morning, have 6 vaccine locations in San Juan County.
Yep.
So the vaccine is rolling out, And we're excited about that because, again, if more of us get vaccinated, hopefully the numbers go down and kids can go back to school, kids can play sports, we can gather again in gatherings for movies and concerts and all those other things that we're not able to do right now.
Yep.
Because it's just not safe. So that's happening. And then again, we'll share the number for call center support if you have trouble with the vaccine registration. The state has set up this number of 855-600-3453, option 0 for vaccine questions, then option 4 for tech support. And I'm just reading that because of our radio audience who can't see it on the
right,
screen.
Right.
So there you go.
So there you go, radio audience.
There you are. So you've been vaccinated. You are already, because of your other job.
Yep.
You have already been vaccinated.
Fully.
No ill effects.
As far as we can tell. No, that's, well, so.
At least nothing lingering that I can see today, looking at you.
No, the second, this is my advice.
Okay.
So I got the Pfizer. The second vaccine is known to be a little harder with the side effects. So I started medicating with Tylenol early. So I took a Tylenol 30 minutes before, and then I just stayed ahead of it. And that turned out to be a really wise decision because I did have a slight fever. It was like 100, but it broke within the night. So it wasn't a huge deal. But
less than a day.
Chills, lethargy, and a slight fever, but really, I mean, it's nothing compared to, well, obviously COVID, but also like really any other. I mean, it wasn't even as bad as like a regular.
But you've now had both
thing.
Right? You've had your.
I'm fully vaccinated.
Inoculated.
Pfizer.
Okay. Thank you. I don't think I knew about that side effect.
Yeah, it was. But, I mean, it wasn't a big deal. But just be prepared to take it slow the day that you get it. That's what I would say.
Right.
Stay ahead of it with Tylenol.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go. That's my advice to you.
Or some other ibuprofen.
No, actually, for whatever reason.
Oh, really?
Tylenol? Our other friend of the show, Dr. Brad Greenberg, advised against ibuprofen. So take Tylenol.
Okay.
I don't know if it's related to. Sometimes ibuprofen causes more bruising if you get like an injection or something. So, yeah.
Well, then.
Tylenol it is.
Good advice.
Acetaminophen.
Okay. That's the one. That's maybe the term I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Whatever's in Tylenol.
Yeah. I mean, right. Yeah. So you can get a generic and it'll just be called acetaminophen, but it's the same
that's
thing.
That's what
it's like
do.
Kleenex versus tissue.
I didn't want to promote a specific product.
Oh, right.
But you know, I got to get a case of it.
Now that I've
now
like,
you can get a case of it at your house from Tylenol.
Pfizer. And like, this is not a specific endorsement.
We are not a commercial radio station.
No.
We are not.
We are not.
But there you go. All right. Anyway.
But the
point is that the vaccines are rolling out.
They are
and
rolling
that is
out.
The point.
And we are actually leading the way, New Mexico, because of our online registration. That's a big deal, and most states do not have that system.
I've heard several kind of like almost horror stories of like senior citizens having to wait in line to get
like
a vaccine for
hours.
Yeah. So I'm grateful that we don't see that in our state, and hopefully the vaccine is getting out quickly to folks that need it.
Yeah.
And I think it is, at least as far as we know.
Yep.
So that's important. Other numbers, here we are, another one of those milestone numbers, unfortunately, from the tracking, right?
Yeah. So United States cases are at 24,446,837.
This is the Johns Hopkins number, just for our radio audience.
Yes.
You can't see the title on the screen.
Right. Okay. Very good. And the number of U.S. confirmed deaths are at 406,384.
So we were above 400,000.
I know.
And that's within the last week. Last week we were not.
I know.
So
I know. It's
as we meet, you know, once a week now, these numbers
are devastating.
Yeah, just growing. But again, hopefully with the rollout of the vaccine and some of these other mandates that we're seeing, if everyone can wear a mask, continue to social distance and, you know, not let your guard down. We are hopeful again that we can turn a corner on this and hopefully get back to, again, getting kids back in school, on the playing field, on the court, concerts, sports. It's a sports analogy.
Sports. Yeah. Yeah. On the
playing
courts.
Field and court. Yeah. Well, volleyball and some of those court things.
Yeah. Basketball.
Yeah.
I know what sports are played on a court versus a field.
Okay. Okay. Good. Thank you. You just looked at me like, what are you talking about?
Well, yeah, it was just.
Which
was
is the normal look I get from Megan during the show.
I know. Brady, you can't see it when we have a map up there. But.
No, but yeah. We see it all. I see it all the time.
All the time.
But there you go. All right. In New Mexico, everybody, our numbers of cases actually have been decreasing a little bit. We're not at the four digits of new cases as much as we were. They still kind of go up and down a little bit. But yesterday, 884 new cases in our state for a total of 165,835. San Juan County cases have been lower as well, not necessarily triple digits per day, but now down to at least 82 as of yesterday, 12,325. 34 additional deaths, however, in New Mexico, and that is high.
Yeah.
Because normally, well, on average, we've been seeing maybe single-digit deaths, but not,
right,
not the last few days, unfortunately. So we're now over 3,000, another horrible milestone.
Yes.
Of lives lost. And of those 34, there were five deaths here in San Juan County. So again, we're at 336. And some of those were younger people who, again, we don't think of being maybe at risk of being a fatality of COVID-19.
Well, you just can't know. I mean,
right,
that's what the docs have been telling us. And it's true, because a lot of people are also walking around with sicknesses that they're not aware of at this juncture. But also, mm-hmm, I think genetics play into it, where seemingly healthy people, you just have no idea how this is going to affect your body. So,
right,
I just want to press that, because for whatever reason, we're still hanging on to the narrative of like, well, they're not old, so they'll be fine. It's like, no, and you'll hear from Aaron Philpott just in a bit about some of these lingering effects, and it's just a nasty, nasty thing.
So, correct, exactly. Recoveries, again, we're at 89,756, another 864 recoveries. So, you know, looking at the rough numbers, you know, about half of these cases, at least it looks like to me, are recovered.
Right.
But part of that other half are fatalities, and then people that are lingering with COVID.
Right.
So that's what we're seeing. That's what I see from these numbers.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I was looking at the numbers for Hurricane Katrina the other day. Don't ask why. I just went down a rabbit hole.
That'll happen.
But that happened.
Been there, done that.
Me especially. But yeah, there was like something like 1,400 people that died from that natural disaster, and it cost us like $125 billion. And then we look at these maps and we realize that there's like 1,400 people dying daily from COVID right now, and it's like day by day. And then Harvard estimates that it's going to cost us $16 trillion.
Wow.
And it's just, yeah, that kind of, when you put it in that kind of comparison, and you just think about how awful the recovery from that was and how devastating it was, and then you think about where we're at now, and
right,
I don't want to bring us down, but I do want to just further that point that there are some things that we can do here that we should be doing.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think we've learned too is as we reopen, right, as we move towards green, which we all want
to
do.
Go to green.
Right?
Gold.
Yep. Green is the goal.
Green.
Go to green, whatever the saying is.
Go to green.
It's not going to be, you know, like a light switch.
No.
You're not going to flip the switch and all of a sudden everybody can get back to doing all this stuff. It's going to be a slow reopening and a slow re-emerging of doing some of these group things that we miss doing.
Right.
So
it's like a slow move. I don't know if you've ever really moved.
Oh, I move slowly all the time.
You do.
Yeah.
That's why we balance each other.
That's right. Hey.
Hey.
Okay.
Okay.
Anyway, thank you for that.
Yep.
The other stories we want to share with you again from the Navajo Nation. Again, their cases are coming down as well. At least they have been on average. 94 new cases yesterday for a total of 26,612. 11 new deaths, however, on the reservation. So that seems higher. 933 total deaths on the Navajo Nation. Again, their stay-at-home lockdown continues now through at least the 25th. I imagine that will probably get extended again. That includes those weekend stay-at-home orders and things like that on the reservation. So, again, as they try to tackle some of their numbers, that's what we're seeing on the reservation. And then the other story that should be noted, is the college's HHPC, our Health and Human Performance Center, is now going to become a COVID-19 vaccination site Wednesdays and Thursdays through March, the month of March. And so that's happened again today, 8 to 10 a.m. And if you're on campus, you can kind of see how they've taken that parking lot in front of the building and reworked it for this vaccine area. The HHPC is still open for exercise. It's just you need to park in a different place.
Right.
So, but that is another way to get the vaccine out to a large number of people, as hopefully the supplies ramp up and we can get them out and folks can start making their appointments and get moved through fairly quickly.
Right.
And that's what we're all hoping for.
Yes.
So there is that. Let's move on. We did get the graph. Well, this was about late last week after we went off the air on Thursday. This graph came out. So again, we want to share that. Again, this is the average number, so it's a little bit easier maybe to see when we tell you every week of what the numbers are. This is kind of a great way to see from March of last year now to where we are. And so in New Mexico, we had that peak back in November, December. Things came down. They're kind of going back up a little bit. But again, the numbers this week show a decline. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see this line at least straighten out or even out or drop a little bit by next week. But the red line is the state of New Mexico. And then the blue line is San Juan County. And the green line is the Navajo Nation. And so you can kind of see where we are compared to our state numbers.
Right.
And San Juan County looks to be evening out a little bit. The blue line, Navajo Nation, same thing, maybe up just a tiny little bit.
Right.
But that's where things are. And then the next one that shows cases and deaths, again, San Juan County cases in the yellow, which is kind of hard to see, and then the COVID-19 deaths, and then the red line is that goal to get to green, right, get that yellow line below the red line, and you can see kind of we're a little far apart there.
Very far
so
apart.
So we are not there. But again, the numbers have kind of come down from our peak again in December. But they're kind of slowly increasing again. So again, my hope is when they update this graph with the latest numbers, it'll drop a little bit.
Yep.
And even out. So we're hopeful that will happen. So
cool.
So that's the latest on that. We can check the watch list.
Yes.
If we should do that. And again, the latest numbers and the watch list, these are the rapid responses, not necessarily the cases, but rapid responses in San Juan County. So again, from the State Environment Department, this is updated every single day. And we've got Apex Network in Kirtland with two rapid responses, the Life Care Center of Farmington with two, Southwestern Home Health in Farmington with three, Southwestern Private Services in Shiprock with two, ALSCO in Farmington with three, Citizens Bank in Aztec with two, Dugan Production in Farmington with three, and then we have Safeway on Main in Aztec with two, Safeway on East Main in Farmington with three, Safeway West Main in Farmington with two, Smith's in Farmington with two, Bloomfield High School with two, and then skip the Tucumcari one because I don't know why that's on there.
Interesting.
But then there's one. Well, I wanted to add the Ngezi report, and Ngezi, the Red Mesa Express store in Ngezi, which they list as McKinley County, with three. But I know that's in the region, so
yeah.
I thought it was important to add that to the
yeah.
watch list. So nothing's been closed. No business has been closed. Again, the state has kind of changed its rules about that, so they have not closed anything down here in San Juan County. So I think that's notable.
Yeah.
So shall we hear from our doctor folks
Let's do
and
it.
Hospital folks?
Let's do it.
Okay, here we go, everybody. This was recorded just yesterday, so the information is still very valid, very pertinent, and very timely. Joining us this morning for an update on conditions at Salem Regional Medical Center, Jeff Bourgeois is here, the president and CEO of the hospital. Jeff Bourgeois, good morning. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Scott and Megan. How are you all?
Doing well, thank you. And I guess the other question is, how are you all doing at the hospital? What are conditions like this week?
Well, Scott, as you know, I'm speaking to you on Wednesday morning, January 20th, and our overall inpatient census at the hospital has softened a little bit over the last 24 hours, which is great news for us. We were really exceptionally full for the better part of the last 2 weeks and going into the early part of this week. However, as of this morning, we are down to an inpatient census at the main hospital of 150. We do still have 63 positive COVID patients and another 20 patients under investigation. So that's a total of 83 COVID-19 and DUI patients in-house. Still a very busy respiratory and COVID-related census at the hospital. Our non-COVID, non-respiratory census is what has softened over the past 24 hours. And that's good news for us, and I believe good news for our community. Additionally, as mentioned before, we look at our 7 and 14-day rolling test positivity averages. And as of yesterday, both were, for the first time in many many days, actually really going back to mid-November, below 20%. The 7-day average is now reduced to approximately 15%, and the 14-day rolling average just moved under 20% yesterday. So really good news. We hope that that trend continues downward. As you know, our state has set a target as part of the red, yellow, green criteria of 5% being the positive rate that would allow a county to move that specific criteria into the green category. So we're encouraged by that. We've also fully vaccinated approximately 1,200 individuals. Most of those are our employees, but we've also done a number of other Tier 1A individuals in our community, other healthcare providers, physicians and physician office employees, and first responders such as fire department and police department personnel. We are also working closely with the county and Department of Health with respect to Tier 1B and subsequent vaccinations. That the county and the Department of Health will lead those efforts in our community, and we will collaborate in however we are asked to do so.
Great. Yeah, so that's like a trepidatious sigh of relief, if you will. So what about the ICU census, Jeff?
Okay, let me it's still very heavy. As of this morning, we had 12 of 14 beds in our respiratory ICU occupied and 7 out of 9 beds in the non-COVID ICU occupied. So very busy, obviously, and we were able to coordinate yesterday on Tuesday, even given the snowstorm we had, to help transfer some patients to Albuquerque to offload a little bit of our really high census that we were experiencing on Tuesday the 19th.
And that's good news. And I guess that would tell us, too, that maybe the other hospitals in our state are also softening a little bit, to use your terms, Jeff Bourgeois, that they're able to accept some of these transfer patients from San Juan Regional Medical Center?
Yes, that's accurate, Scott. And the lessening of their census began several days before ours. So that's exactly spot on. Their bed availability helped us move some patients.
And are you hearing any reasoning why this is happening? Was the increase in cases maybe from the holiday season, is that kind of tapering off a little bit, or has anyone been able to put their finger on why this is happening? Does the vaccine seem to be helping a little bit?
Well, it's actually, our COVID census really hasn't dropped off that significantly. As I mentioned earlier, it's the non-COVID, non-respiratory census that's dropping back off. The most recent modeling, I believe we've had a chance to review is now well over a week old from Los Alamos National Labs, but it shows that we should, here in the Northwest region, continue to expect a pretty heavy COVID-related inpatient census for the next 4 weeks or so. So it is still, we believe, part of a post-holiday spike, if you will. You know, if you look at our test positivity rate that really peaked in the first week or so. I'm going to go back to that report. Excuse me.
Sure.
We really peaked on that test positivity rate in the couple of weeks after Christmas. And, that's what really bumped our census up, I believe, particularly last week. And so hopefully that is now going to correlate into lesser COVID census for us going forward.
Right. Well, and we can remember seeing some of those positivity rates of 20%, 19%, and you're telling us that it's down maybe by 4 or 5 points. So that's good news.
You bet.
Very good. Well, Jeff Bourgeois, we always appreciate your time, and to extend our thanks to all of the folks who are working with you at the hospital on the front lines. And one of those people is actually on the line as well, and we want to talk to her this morning. Dr. Aaron Philpott is back with us to give us a little bit of an update and answer some of our questions. Dr. Philpott, good morning to you. It's great to have you back on the program this morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. It's great to have you. I know Megan has a question, a couple questions, as do I, so we'll start.
Yeah, we're ready to nerd out. It's been a while.
There you go.
So I've been reading stuff on the COVID brain, as they're calling it. We've known about brain fog, issues with memory, some issues with mood. So I was wondering if there's any current updates on the COVID brain and whether or not we know how lasting these damages are.
Yeah, that's a great question, Megan. You know, just to start, I'm a hospitalist, so I'm seeing really the acute COVID situations here, and we are most certainly, as Jeff pointed out, been not without many cases of acute COVID. So I haven't seen too terribly many patients in follow-up, though I'm in close contact with the COVID to home group as we meet every week and kind of discuss cases to ensure we have some continuity from our inpatient environment to our outpatient. So definitely have heard different stories from their group and, of course, been doing some reading myself. And just to start, I think we're getting a little bit clearer of a timeline on the continuum of COVID. It's being sort of broken down into three parts now. The acute COVID, which can last up to 4 weeks. We have people bumping in and out of the hospital that seem to improve and then have another acute worsening of their status, whether it be respiratory or other issues, prompting return. And then the second is just ongoing symptomatic. Some people, for whatever reason, are getting these really sort of protracted continuation of their initial illness, which goes from 4 to 12 weeks. And then the post-COVID is the third category on the continuum, if you will, that has received a lot of different names and kind of varying by country and what exactly is going on, but that's considered greater than or equal to about 12 weeks of ongoing symptoms and issues and has been called the long haul. I think that's the most common name in the U.S., long COVID, long-term COVID, post-COVID syndrome, to sort of describe this phenomenon that we're seeing. And now millions of people. The super interesting thing about this is this gathering body of evidence is sort of it sort of started mounting on social media. I think it's, you know, we are so consumed by dealing with the acute COVID situation that people are, you know, desperately looking for help and support that are experiencing these long-term symptoms. So it's just a little bit, it's a very interesting sort of unfolding of literature information, I guess would be a better way to explain it, of people reporting exactly how they're feeling. And there's all these different websites and databases collecting information on this now and some observational studies. So to specifically focus on the psychological or the cognitive effects of COVID, I did look at one study. It was about 100 patients that were, these are specifically hospitalized patients, but I will say this long COVID or long haul COVID can occur even in people with more mild illness is what we're finding. So people who never make it to the hospital. And I know we've talked about that before. But this specific study looked at 100 patients discharged from the hospital. 24% of them reported PTSD, and I find that an alarming number as a hospitalist. I think this is an extremely scary time for people, you know, as we've been so consumed by the news and the pandemic and have, you know, in our region, so many people have had loved ones die. They're here, you know, unfortunately, just due to visitor policy restrictions, which have been implemented across the country, often alone. And I think we've been really trying to work hard on focusing on meeting people's needs and doing mental health check-ins to make it as smooth and, you know, minimize sort of the fear and how people are feeling here in the hospital. But anyway, 25% with PTSD, 18% with new or worsening memory problems, and then 6% with concentration issues. And then I think another study found that over half of COVID survivors reported worsening quality of life. And then there was some other mention of a higher rate of new onset psychiatric issues. And there's a lot on sort of these support groups about sort of post-COVID being associated with this thing called ME or chronic fatigue syndrome. and some very similar parallels to what those patients experience. So just in sum, I would say we see you out there for those who are suffering from post-COVID, and we are working to study and find out the best treatments. And it's going to take time, but I think you're not alone, and people are not alone in this. And I think we're going to have some more answers with time.
Thank you, Dr. Philpott. And it's something that we've been talking about, I think, since the very beginning of all this, about the ever-evolving understanding of COVID and what it does and how it impacts the body and all the things that you just mentioned. I wanted to ask you, too, about, in addition to the brain and cognitive impacts, we also hear about impacts to the lungs and maybe heart damage or things like that. Is that also something that we're learning more about, you're learning more about?
Yes, definitely, Scott. There's a lot of studies on that as well, and those are more the sort of what we classify as the physical effects of COVID. You know, observationally, we've seen here in the hospital patients returning weeks later with new-onset arrhythmias like atrial fibrillation, which is an irregular heartbeat, and then new-onset heart failure. There's been a number of studies that have shown that there's some myocarditis or inflammation in the heart muscle after COVID on cardiac MRIs. A lot of people are, you know, the fatigue kind of tying in with the psychological impacts. It may be actually, you know, related to sort of these different physical effects on the heart and the lungs. A good number of patients who, especially those hospitalized, but even some who are not, do have at least, you know, in the short term, lung damage. So we found decreased pulmonary function on objective testing after COVID. So definitely the virus or the inflammation from the virus is having a physical impact, and at least, you know, hopefully kind of more in the temporary realm, hopefully we'll see that these people recover with some rehab and support and regain their pre-COVID exercise tolerance and ability to just high quality of life. There's a lot of chronic coughs that are going on for quite some time. So the most common physical things are fatigue, dyspnea, chest pain, and cough related to the number of different COVID manifestations. And then some of the less common but still seen things are ongoing loss of sense of taste or smell, joint pain. We see a lot of headache, dizziness, and sleep difficulty. That's been a common one both in the acute period and in the post COVID period.
Wow, gosh, it's like every day.
A whole laundry list.
It's a whole
stuff,
laundry.
Right?
I know, oh it's such goodness. A nasty.
Yeah.
But so we've heard about mutated strains. Of course, viruses are always mutating, as we've been told. But what is the update there on those strains? And we've talked before about these other coronaviruses, the MERS virus. And have we studied those enough to give us information on how to deal with these? And are these mutated strains more dangerous? Are they less? What's going on there?
Sure. Yeah, great question and super interesting stuff. So the good news is, we'll start with that, is there's no evidence so far suggesting that these new variants cause more severe disease. So the viruses, you know, I actually don't know too much if we study this specifically, the mutagenesis among the MERS and the SARS-CoV-1, but I will say we do know that flu, you know, every year we have to get a new flu vaccine because of the antigenic drift. So it changes slightly to sort of evade our immune system or our antibodies that we have generated the year prior. We are not seeing that that SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19 is mutating at such a rate that flu does. In fact, it's been pretty stable. These mutations are obviously important for a number of reasons because, number one, it can affect the ability of the virus to spread, so that's like a gain of function. It's more effective in spreading between people, and that's, you know, biologically good for it, survival of the fittest. It can also affect our vaccine efficacy, and so far, the two main mutants we haven't found the preliminary data at least says that it is unlikely to, you know, be different enough that the vaccine wouldn't work for it. And then also the monoclonal antibodies are targeting, which I would like to mention in a minute, are targeting a certain area on the virus and how it binds. So if it changes enough, it could evade that. And then I think those are the main things that it could change to evade or affect. The three main variants we're seeing are the number one, the UK variant, which probably everyone's heard of. It's the B117, and it's has an unusually large number of mutations in it, and it's looking like it's spreading more easily. I think I read somewhere it's accounting for about 2/3 of cases in the UK now. So you can imagine it's the more effective at spreading, it will rise to the top sooner, this variant. So not causing more severe disease so far as we know. So that's good news. And the vaccine is still thought to be effective against it based on where the mutation is. The second variant is the South African variant. And that came in October. The UK one was in September. And that's 1.351, I think it was. And it emerged separate from the UK variant. There's some overlap, but also in the spike protein, not thought to be different enough again that the vaccine wouldn't cover it. And then the third newer variant, which sounds a little bit scarier to me, is the Brazil P1. And they found that in 4 travelers coming from Brazil to Tokyo. And it is a little bit more concerning. There is some evidence to suggest that previous infection won't neutralize it, and possibly the vaccine won't cover it. But we don't have enough information on that yet, and it's been found in a very small number of people. Our country, the CDC, does have a system in place to look at these different variants across the United States, because as we've just talked about, it's very pertinent if we identify a variant and that has a significant different impact.
Very true, Dr. Philpott. And to be clear, right, we have identified at least one of those variants already in the state of New Mexico, if I'm remembering correctly.
You are correct. The UK variant has been found in the United States. You know, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. I did read one article that just with this gain of function and its ability to spread, that it could cause a later surge, like a spring surge. But we don't know that with certainty yet, but just kind of modeling after what it did in the UK, I think that's possible.
Right. And you mentioned the vaccines, too. Dr. Philpott, and I had a question for you about that. We are hearing that for folks who have been vaccinated against COVID-19, they may not get sick, of course, but it's possible that they could still spread the virus to others. Is that correct? And I guess, how does that work? It's able to suppress it a little bit in that person, but not the infectiousness of it?
Yeah, this is a very confusing point and a great question. I think, you know, we don't know is the bottom line. We don't know yet, I will say, because I think we will know soon. The Moderna vaccine trial did look at rates of infection after in the vaccine and the placebo group, and it does appear that there was some evidence that the vaccine does prevent transmission. We know that a number of other vaccines in our that we've used in the past do prevent transmission. So it's not a slam dunk. It's definitely going to prevent asymptomatic transmission, and I think that's been the real challenging thing about COVID, is we have all these asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic people transmitting the virus still. So you're out and feeling well, going to work, attending school, and carrying on with your daily life and shedding COVID and affecting people around you. So we don't know if that could possibly occur with a vaccine. We're hopeful it will not based on previous data. But that being said, we should not change how we are interfacing with society, our friends, our family, or what we're doing at the hospital, because there just isn't enough data yet to say we're good to go on this front. So, and I think especially thinking about the transmissibility of the UK strain and some of these different aspects, it will be, essential. I believe very strongly the vaccine is going to be fundamental in ending this. We still need to wear our masks, wash our hands, maintain our social distancing, and continue to be very vigilant in all those public health measures.
Very good advice, Dr. Philpott. It's just a nasty little virus, isn't it?
As an understatement.
As an understatement.
Yeah.
Exactly. But it's not going away anytime soon, unfortunately, is what we're learning. So, Dr. Philpott, we can't thank you enough for your time this morning. And Jeff Bourgeois, again to you, thank you for joining us, as you always do, with an update. But both of you, we really appreciate the work that you are doing at Salmon Regional Medical Center for all of us. So thank you very much.
Hey, my pleasure,
so
Scott.
Much.
And might I offer just a word of thanks and appreciation for Dr. Philpott? It's amazing to me her capacity to do what she does clinically on the inpatient side and still have time to research and help us stay current on all the evolving learnings around COVID-19. She is a tremendous asset for San Juan Regional Medical Center and this entire community, and we should acknowledge that. Thank you, Dr. Philpott.
Agreed.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
That's why she's a friend of the show, Jeff, and a rock star.
That's right.
Thanks so much.
Spending your valuable time talking to us. Good grief.
Good grief. I know.
But thank you. Thank you both. And again, our many thanks to both of you. So thank you very much. That's Jeff Bourgeois, the president and CEO of San Juan Regional Medical Center, and Dr. Aaron Philpott, a hospitalist at San Juan Regional Medical Center, joining us this morning here on KSJE. Lots of good information. We are back in the studio, of course. Scott Micken along with Megan Cullop. And
here we are.
Always great to hear from the docs.
Yeah.
Right?
I love it.
There you go.
Favorite segment.
We appreciate them. I wanted to just an update, right? It is January 21st, 2021, as I said. Palindrome Day.
Right.
1-21-21. Write it backwards.
20, I know. Well,
1-21-21.
So it's 21-21-1.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a palindrome.
There you go.
You're correct.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I may not know ibuprofen, but I know palindromes.
Yes.
So thank you. And thanks to my friend Sherry, who pointed that out.
Yes.
I did not come up with that.
No,
all
I know.
I knew there must have been some numerological thing.
This sounds...
But yeah. Sherry was the one that actually put it in the form of a text to get it into my attention.
It's a palindrome.
So I appreciate that. But yeah. We're waiting for our next guest to arrive. And in the meantime...
Sea chanties.
What is going on? What... We're a landlocked state, yet you are coming to the show with a story about sea chanties.
Well, my personal algorithm that does some background research pro bono for us did find a story that talked about how on TikTok, I'm not on TikTok. That's like a younger generation thing.
It's, but you are the younger generation. That's why you're here.
Well, Gen Z is now.
There's even younger?
Well, yeah. Right, well, the oldest millennial is now 40.
Right. Time for a new co-host.
So, yeah. Yeah, exactly. We were supposed to be the young hip one. I guess we have to look elsewhere. But, yeah, so TikTok apparently is blowing up with sea chanties.
Wow.
There is no explanation for this.
I'm trying to wrap my brain around that statement.
I know. Well, like, for those of you guys that don't know what a sea chanty is, it's like a pirate naval thing. And not like my navel, but like the Navy, just to be clear.
Okay.
So it's like, arrgh, da, 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 and it's very like, I think the theory is that they're like designed for group singing. So it's like a solidarity thing and they're designed to be sung easily. So it's like a simple melody that like people can get into and it's like a rallying thing. But I'm not a huge like sea chanties. It's not, I don't ever think to... I listen to a lot of genres of music, but that is not one of them.
Not, no. Well, apparently, you need to be on TikTok.
Apparently, it's taken off on the TikTok.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go.
Crazy.
It is a little crazy, but it's interesting.
Bananas.
Just one more thing.
One more banana thing that came out of COVID.
But TikTok has really taken off.
Yeah, I think it's like the preferred platform now or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's that short video thing again, right? Isn't that what it features?
It's like it's like a lot of bang for people's buck. Short, I don't know. I don't.
There was another one not too long ago that was another short video thing that now the name escapes me, but it was people.
Vine?
Vine, that's it. That's right.
I remember
and
I was working with teenagers at
while,
that point.
Right?
They were all
remember
into
that?
Vine, yep.
And that was only seconds long, I think.
It's very short.
Short vines people were making. So anyway.
So I don't know. Yeah, the TikTok. I don't get it. I don't get TikTok humor half the time. I'm like, why is this funny?
Right.
But
I hear you.
I'm pretty wedded to Twitter. That's my favorite.
Is it okay? I gotcha.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, I don't know where our other guest is.
I know.
We're expecting her to call.
9:40.
Yeah, she's a little late.
So
Carmen,
aside from the sea
please
chanties,
call us. Yeah.
What else have you heard?
You know, that's about all I've heard from you.
I know.
Exactly. But,
I know.
But yeah.
Let's see. There was another, this was a while ago, but there was a report about detecting COVID through sound.
Really?
Yeah, it was a sound engineer that was working on that. And so the idea was that, you know, depending on the sound of like the cough, you could tell whether this is a COVID cough or like a different type of cough. So that was what the sound engineer was working on. So that's pretty cool, you know, cross-disciplinary stuff. You don't
right.
usually associate sound design with pandemic control, but
no.
And I've been looking for an update on the dogs. Remember the dogs?
I do remember the dogs.
Yeah, they were those. Like, yeah, being trained to sniff it out, which mm-hmm. dogs can do that with diabetes, we know.
Right.
But yeah. So I don't know what the update there is on the dogs.
Interesting. Well, they can do a lot of things, right? They you know, I mean, obviously bloodhounds are used for missing persons and things like that, and they've been used forever, but dogs have that really advanced sense of smell, so
yeah.
they can really sniff out things. So amazing.
It would be kind of cool if instead of swabbing, we just had puppies.
Right.
That came up to the car.
Exactly.
Check for drugs and COVID.
That would be.
Same time.
That would be awesome. But yeah. Well, I don't know. Our guest is not here. So I don't know what happened to her.
I don't know. Yeah. It's maybe, hopefully an emergency didn't come up.
Hopefully not.
But
we are.
It's MIA.
Let's see.
The payroll protection program was going to be on the docket, right? So we have a new rollout, some
right.
more funding for that.
I'm going to try to call her while you talk just briefly, okay?
Okay.
So hold on 1 second.
I don't know what else I'll talk about.
The payroll protection. We're going to talk about that.
Well, all I know is that we have another rollout. Oh, I think somebody's on the phone.
It's me calling out, but thank you for noticing. light turned on.
Man.
That would be me calling out.
Okay.
But we are waiting to hear, hopefully,
well,
from Carmen.
I think we're still waiting, too, on the $2,000 thing has been passed by Congress.
Stand by, okay? Okay. I got her.
Okay. I'm back, and so is she. So we are back. I'm going to put my headphones back on. And so we were Carmen Martinez, who was having a hard time getting through to us because apparently the call kept going to voicemail. So,
oh geez,
I'm sorry that happened. But you're on the phone now, Carmen, and are you there?
Yes. Good morning.
Yay! I am good, thank you, and thank you for joining us because we were running out of sea shanty stories to share
yeah.
with everyone
it's
on
coming
the,
up broke
on the show. So, Carmen Martinez, everyone, is the director of the Small Business Development Center here at San Juan College, and we wanted to have her on the show to talk a bit about some new programs for small businesses, right, Carmen?
Yes, that is correct. So, the Paycheck Protection Program is open once again for small businesses. This time around, they are offering the first draw, which is the same as what was contained in the last stimulus bill. Those companies that have already received a Paycheck Protection Program loan and have used up the funds are now eligible to apply for a second draw for their businesses to pay for payroll and other related expenses.
Got you. And so this is obviously something that's now available for these local businesses to apply for. And the money goes pretty quick, though, right?
This time around, there should be enough funds. So the program's been open about 2 weeks. All lenders were able to start processing loans on Tuesday of this week. All local lenders are doing so. There was like $5 billion that went out supposedly the first week and a half. However, nobody's indicating that there's going to be a run on it like there was the first time around. There should be plenty of funds, but if people need assistance in figuring out the loan applications and, okay, do I qualify for the first or second, the second draw does require a revenue decrease of 25% from one quarter in 2019 to the same quarter in 2020. And so we can help people figure all that out. There's also special set asides for companies with NAICS codes that start in 72. These are for accommodation and food service businesses. Those are the ones that are hardest hit. Usually you can get 2.5 times 1 month's payroll for a PPP. These companies in the 72 code can receive 3.5 times their monthly payroll amount.
Wow, that sounds great. And that's different, right, from the earlier PPP programs?
Correct, yeah. So the rules are different for the first round versus the second round.
Great. And what about other things that are available? Is there anything else available to small businesses? We've had quite a number of restaurants that have closed in town indefinitely, mm-hmm. and that's been pretty sad. So what else is out there?
So that's why that special 3.5 set aside was, for restaurants. So another thing that is still open is the economic injury disaster loan. That was reopened January 1. It will go through December 31st, 2021. We are still waiting for the grant portion of that. That has yet to reopen. That was that $10,000, if you'll recall from last time. Some businesses will be eligible for that. For those businesses that have an existing 7A, and I'm going to throw a lot of different terms out there. That's why, you can call us and we can clarify this information. Existing 7A loans and 504 loans that they have through their lender, but is guaranteed by the SBA, they can get loan payments as well. Some will be 6 months, some will be 3 months, depending on when that loan was closed. So there's, for existing businesses with existing SBA debt, there's that relief of the SBA making those monthly payments. We also have the employee retention tax credit that has been backdated, if you will. In 2020, you could not have a PPP and claim employee retention tax credit. This new stimulus bill allows you to go back into 2020 and potentially do the employee retention tax credit. So what that means is for the payroll taxes that you would have paid in 2020, you could get a credit of up to $5,000 per employee if you qualify. And again, we're that one we're still waiting on specific rules, but we have a pretty clear picture of it. And so now into 2021, you can also do the employee retention tax credit. And this one goes up to $14,000 per employee. You just can't use the PPP and the employee retention tax credit for the same payroll periods. So there's the planning involved in how you're going to use those funds so that you can use both methods of benefit for your business.
Very good. And Carmen, would you just kind of share a little bit about how we can get in touch with you? And all these services are free to these businesses, correct?
Yes, correct. We will work with you. The one lovely thing about Zoom is that we can share documents on each other's screens so we can actually walk through, since we can't meet in person right now. We can actually show you exactly where the information needs to go on the loan applications or the tax returns, all that kind of good stuff. So you can reach us at 566-3528 or email us at sbdc@sanjuancollege.edu.
Very good. Well, Carmen Martinez, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I know it's a huge help for all of the businesses that are experiencing economic hardships during this time, which is a lot of them. As we said,
many. Very true.
Yes.
Thank you, Carmen.
Yes.
Take care.
You're very welcome. Have a wonderful day.
You too. That's Carmen Martinez. And that is our show.
That's our show.
We have filled the hour.
We did fill
about.
The hour.
So thank you, everybody, for joining us. And we'll be back next week on Thursday, of course, with another local information program about COVID-19 from KSJE. So everyone stay well and stay safe. And we'll see you next Thursday. Bye-bye.